Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
So I tell you, I am actually pretty surprised that this distraction story has continued as long as it has and has gotten as pervasive as it has. In regard to the same story I was talking about yesterday, which is the same thing going on today, with so much going on, with an open military U.S.-backed coup taking place in Venezuela, right in our faces, while the media can't stop talking about a bunch of things that largely don't matter, and the independent media seems to be completely distracted by something that the mainstream media flopped right in front of them. We Are Change, Press for Truth, everybody. I like these outlets, but I can't believe that it's something that continues to be pushed out. We continue to talk about the fact that there is an effort underway to control the sphere of discussion, to control in a very narrow view of what's going on in the world and allow us to debate within what they give us. It's been happening for a very long time. So I have a lot of important things to talk about today, largely about Venezuela, which I think is very, very important. Some stuff about Syria, some emails showing some connection to Al-Qaeda, and even open claims of attacks against Israel because they've continued to attack Syria, and no one in the world seems to be doing anything about it. More about Hashemi and the U.S. citizen that's still in jail without charge. All kinds of stuff. But I want to begin today with something that I want to give a shout out to Derek Bros, of the Conscious Resistance Network. If you're not familiar with that, there's a link to his video in the show notes. I recommend you check out his work. We've had him on the show for an interview a long time back. He's an excellent researcher and journalist. And he put out a video today that I was very happy to see, entitled Seven Stories You Missed While the Media Obsessed Over MAGA Kid. And there, you can see the Conscious Resistance Network right there. I highly recommend you check it out. And in addition to that, the anti-media also put out an article basically with the same information with his video, but a nice little outline with links to each story so you can check them out. It's really something that we're seeing. Now, again, while the U.S. and the president himself has now openly said that they are standing with somebody who is carrying out a military-backed coup, or actually not really military-backed, we'll get to that in a moment, but an aggressive, violent revolution taking place against the legitimate, is regarded by the vast majority of the international community, legitimate president of Venezuela. Now, many may disagree with that, and you may be right, but that's a huge story, and it's not being talked about. Staggering to me. Now, I quickly want to go over these real quick, and again, a huge shout-out to Derek Bros. I want to go over these really quickly for everyone to see, so you can see what he's talking about, and see just how important these stories are, some of which I haven't even talked about. You know, as you know, there's so much going on. But most people missing these, as well as everything else that we talk about, while being obsessed with this one story. Everyone's saying, here's what you're missing. Let me give you my insight on the same thing. The mainstream's lying to you. They're misrepresenting it. They're dividing us. Yes. Yes. We should all know that by now. So here's some of the things that I want to show you that he went over. Some pretty amazing stories here. Now, this one, obviously, you can see federal court rules police may not compel passenger ID during traffic stop. That's huge. This is something people have lost their lives over. And now they're saying that federal court rules that they cannot compel you to give your ID during a traffic stop. That's pretty astounding. The next one here, FBI can neither confirm nor deny that it monitors your social media posts. Apparently, the ACLU is suing seven federal agencies after their failure to disclose social media monitoring data. And they basically say, yeah, we can't confirm or deny, which basically means they're doing it. And this is something that's not a surprise to us, but this is a huge story. Court rules ag-gag law criminalizing undercover reporting violates the First Amendment. Again, saying this is the idea that people are trying to undercover reporting going into farming of cows and chickens and showing how badly they're treated and how horrible it is and the hormones and all these terrible things. And there was a law saying you couldn't do that. And the court has ruled that that is violating your First Amendment rights, which is huge. By the way, on this story, first of all, of course, the pop-up. On this story, If you've never been to one of these places, they treat them like military compounds. I once took a tour when I worked at a restaurant of a slaughtering plant for cows, and they have people with guns, they have fences, they have cameras. I'm not kidding. It's crazy. It's because they're targets of what they would call domestic terrorism, but it's people that are trying to fight back against what they think is foul treatment, but it's crazy. And so this is something that they're changing. Now this one, it's pretty huge. Rosenstein, DOJ, exploring ways to more easily spy on journalists. You know, this is huge news, but you won't hear most of this from the mainstream channels or the independent media, apparently, while they're distracted with a huge story. This one we've covered already. Yellow Vest movement has gone global. We just talked about this recently, but it's a gigantic story. As far as I can tell, one of the largest global protest movements that I've ever seen. I may be missing one, but this is huge. And many people are not even talking about it. This is one that I recently saw that I haven't covered, but it's still hugely important. We've talked about the Anthropocene. It's called the sixth extinction, which is what many scientists think we're in right now. If the media refuses to talk about it, as different species die off every single day in this world. And now they're showing that below 1%, the monarch butterfly is approaching total and irreversible extinction. Big deal. Another one, the last one that he covers, American anchor for Iran's Press TV, still jailed without charge. Still jailed without charge. Now, all of these stories, as well as everything we're going to talk about today, Venezuela, a massive regime change effort, apparently that the U.S. pretends they don't do, Syria, Israel, foreign policy in general, the loss of our rights in this country, on, and we're talking about a MAGA kid and a Native American protester that was taken grossly out of context while they ignore all the black people standing there screaming racial slurs. Funny how that works. And yeah, it's right to point that out, but not to consume your coverage with only what they want you to be talking about. Now let's get into, well, first let's continue one step further after this anchor, because let's start with this, and then let's get into the meat of the story, which is about Venezuela, because this is a big... This is one of the most overt things I've ever seen. This is something they used to do covertly with the CIA, and then they started doing covertly still with NGOs such as the National Endowment for Democracy, but now apparently they're just stepping right up and saying, yeah, we're backing them while we scream about Russia meddling in the U.S. Pretty interesting. But moving on to the first one here, kind of stemming from his last story, something I do want to cover again following up. U.S. detention of American-Iranian journalist draws local international protests. Huge. People around the world are now very upset about this. And if you're American, you should absolutely be upset about this. The reality that this person, a U.S. citizen, is still being held without charge for 10 days now. 10 days. The idea that she's supposed to be a material witness for of a grand jury. And of this very thin law about being able to detain someone who might be a flight risk. And keeping them basically indefinitely, even though that law is supposed to only apply to basically a short detainment for a deposition, when in reality now they're just stretching it out to as long as they would want, very post 9/11 style. And another article, the same, coming from InPress News, which says, the brazen detention of Marzia Hashemi, America's newest political prisoner, which is absolutely spot on, absolutely spot on. And this, there's a lot of quick points that I want to cover in this that I wanted to tell you about here. Now, as it says, she is due to testify before a grand jury for the third time, mind you, in an unknown criminal case on Wednesday that they refuse to talk about, they refuse to tell her family about, as their protesters are rallying for release all over. But there's some points they went over in this last article that I want to point out. It says, all presidents have used the Department of Justice for constitutionally prohibited personal ends. The calculated seizure and political intimidation of Mrs. Hashemi and her family in the United States is but the most recent flagrant instance. So this is actually not new. It's just I think people are beginning to pay attention a bit more. And it says, most important, the court must keep in mind that the witness has not been charged with an offense and should undertake such examination as is necessary to determine the degree possible whether such examination would determine the degree possible whether she will in fact appear for testimony of her own volition, thus militating against the need for imposition of any court-imposed conditions. I was reading something in the chat. It says she has been released now, it says. So very interesting. If that, I can't confirm that. Someone commented that in the chat. We'll have to find out. But the reality here is that the how this is broken down is that she has been detained this entire time under the guise that she's a flight risk. But as the article points out, The court has a legal obligation to prove this. And there's no way to prove that. There's no way they could have had the detainment orders prior to when she landed in this country. So basically what they're saying, as it says, under the law, the government cannot seek, nor can the court issue a material witness order on the basis of mere soothsay that noncompliance is expected at some near date. And this is what they did. Oh, well, she's going to be a flight risk, so we have to detain her now. So they're saying Press TV says about 20 minutes ago, which is fantastic. So too bad I didn't wait another hour. I probably could have had more information on this story, but I'll definitely follow up tomorrow with what's going on. But regardless, the bottom line is an American citizen was detained for 10 days without charge under the guise that she was a flight risk. And what they did inherently was against the law. And they know this. Now, it says under these circumstances, it's well grounded to assume that as a Muslim and a popular Iranian employed journalist, long critical of the United States, that Ms. Hashemi was at some point added to a list of political dissidents to be detained upon her return to the United States. Once here, she was moved quickly by the government to dissident status of that of presumptive disobedient witness and arrested, making these conclusions, which by definition are against their very laws. It just shows you how liberal they're becoming with basically all laws after 9/11. As long as they can point and say there's a terror threat or a, you know, whatever, it's Iran, clearly that's something they're making a big deal about, that they can just kind of get fast and loose with the laws that they're supposed to be upholding. That should be alarming for all of us, including people like myself. So just think about that. Now, thank you, Cyrus, for pointing that out in the chat. We will have to follow up on that, but it's great. If this is in case the fact, it's great to hear that she has been released, and I'm very eager to find out why exactly she was detained. And hopefully she's going to be screaming to high heaven about how she was detained for 10 days, clearly for something that if she's not being charged with a crime and was released, that is unprecedented, at least as I can tell. I think these things usually happen more, you know, discreetly. But again, people are paying more attention today. So now let's get to the bulk of the story today. And this is about Venezuela. And this story, this is unbelievable to me. It truly is. We just talked about Pompeo saying something, Bolton saying something. Everyone speaking out, basically openly saying that they want to see regime change in Venezuela, while they then ridiculously out of their other side of their mouth say, well, we don't want regime change anywhere. We don't want to occupy. We're a force for good, what they always continue to say. And now they're backing somebody else and creating the situation for more chaos for the Venezuelan people. Now, I know plenty of people disagree with that, but let's get into the information here. Now, here's the article. Here's the next article that I want to get into, coming from RT, entitled Trump recognizes U.S.-backed head of Venezuela's opposition, Juan Guaido, as country's interim president. Again, this is the guy that is backed by the National Assembly, the group that lost its power in 2017 when the Constituent Assembly was voted in, widely regarded as a legitimate election by the vast majority of the world, including Jimmy Carter, which I'm going to talk about again in a moment. But the reality is that they're now when they say that just because they want to just say that Maduro is illegitimate, that means that the next person in line under their constitution should be this man, Guaido. But the National Assembly is no longer the group that is in control. So they're all over the place. They should just come out and say, we don't care what anybody thinks. We want this person to lead, and we're the U.S., and we're going to do that, because that's what's happening here. Now, U.S. President Donald Trump has recognized Venezuela's opposition leader, Juan Guaido, as interim president in a, as the article calls it, and I agree, a provocative move against the elected government of Nicolas Maduro. And he encouraged other Western governments to do the same, calling on anybody. This is how it works in the past, as we've seen Nikki Haley basically outright threaten groups, other countries that don't just go along with what the U.S. and Israel want. Now it says, quote, today I am officially recognizing the president of the Venezuelan National Assembly, Juan Guaido, as the interim president of Venezuela, according to Donald Trump. Now, as they said, Trump was the one kind of holding out on this so far, as basically everyone in his administration was saying this. And now finally, in a pretty much unprecedented move, he has openly spoken out with somebody other than the president of a country, despite what they may think about legitimate or otherwise. Now, he called the Maduro government illegitimate and, quote, directly responsible for any threats posed to the Venezuelan people. Funny how they always do this. You know, if anybody carries out a chemical weapons attack in Syria, it's going to be Assad. You know, any threats or negative things that happen because of our actions, it's going to be responsible. Maduro is going to be responsible. That's basically what he's saying. He's directly responsible for any threats posed to the Venezuelan people from our economic sanctions, from our aggressive fomenting unrest on the ground. It's all Maduro's fault. Now, he added he would use, quote, the full weight of the United States economic and diplomatic power to press for the restoration of Venezuelan democracy. Funny, this coming from an oligarchy, and encourage the other governments in the Western Hemisphere to also recognize Guaido. Now, Trump has steadily expanded economic sanctions against Venezuela in recent months, as we continue to point out, while declaring steadfast support for the Venezuelan people. And as I continue to point out, the sanctions have been heavily criticized by many analysts, commentators who say that the Venezuelan people are the ones, the very people who the sanctions will hurt the most. And this is not only a verifiable fact throughout history, the U.S.'s own documentation acknowledges that this is the point. And it's funny how we can't stop and put those things together in our minds for those that don't want to recognize it. They openly have talked in the past on their own documentation that sanctions will drive the average people to suffer so they revolt against their own government. That is the point. That's why Ron Paul calls these an act of war, which they are. U.S. has responded to sanctions in the past as an act of war, so it's funny that they don't expect the same from other people. The Venezuelan people are suffering because of U.S. actions, possibly for other things as well, but you can't ignore the U.S. aspect in all of this. Now, a U.S. senator, in addition to this, from Florida, is openly calling for designating Venezuela a terrorist state and imposing additional sanctions in order to pressure Nicolas Maduro to resign. Again, sanctions that will hurt the people. Senator Rick Scott, the junior senator from Florida, told reporters in Washington on Wednesday that Maduro is, quote, clearly a terrorist. Which is just unbelievable. Their willingness to just stretch the imagination, whatever they want to be the case, is just what they say, with basically no facts to back it up. Same way they call Iran the leading sponsor of terrorism. Anybody with two brain cells to rub together can see quite clearly that that is not the case. They may have their problems, as I will always admit, but they are not the leading sponsors of terrorism. I would give that clearly to either the U.S., Saudi Arabia, or Israel. Hands down. And if you can't admit that, you're blinding yourself to the reality. Now, Scott added, quote, the way Maduro has treated his citizens is disgusting. Interesting. Even though every Venezuelan that I talk with says the opposite. And the reality is that he has been legitimately voted in, so they have no right to step in regardless. And what they're doing is hurting the people far more than anything he's doing. This is my opinion. Now, Scott also urged U.S. President Donald Trump to, quote, look at every sanction we can have and impose penalties on anybody doing business with or supporting Maduro. So let's just keep putting sanctions on the people that we're trying to help. Scott said he expects the opposition leader, Juan Guaido, who has declared himself interim president, will call elections as quickly as possible. Sure, because when the elections come out the way they want them, then it's good. Otherwise, it's not. As we see happening in our own country, this is ridiculous. Now, earlier this week, Maduro had called for a revision of Venezuela's diplomatic relations with the U.S. after Vice President Mike Pence openly called for regime change in the struggling country. So kind of threatening that he was going to be disconnecting with them, but not just yet. But Maduro said the U.S. was shamelessly interfering in his country's domestic affairs and rejected its, quote, imperialist interventionism, which he said promoted instability and violence. And regardless of whether you think the U.S. is right in what they're doing, you cannot ignore that truth. Intervention, the very thing that Trump ran on not doing anymore. Now, here's some interesting tweets that I wanted to share that I thought were, one, first one is actually kind of funny. One, it says, Donald Trump, Mike Pence, and Marco Rubio got to decide who is president of Venezuela. That's democracy, you guys. Facetious, but spot on. Another one says, the U.S. seems set on sparking a civil war in Venezuela, declaring their own Venezuelan president. Totally not meddling. And this one a bit more serious, which is probably the most spot-on one that I've seen from Glenn Greenwald, the close, longtime partners and allies of Saudi Arabia and the UAE, a couple of dictator, you know, authoritarian regimes that the U.S. works with, decided that their commitment to freedom and democracy are so great that they had to insert themselves into Venezuela politics in defense of those deeply and genuinely held values, which he's being facetious as well. The reality is, if you can't rectify the absurdity of the U.S. working directly with one of the worst authoritarian regimes in the world, Saudi Arabia, and then pretending to be offended and, oh, I can't stand, we need to save the democracy of Venezuela, is unbelievable. The contradiction in their logic is just astounding to me. And if you can't think about that, then you're willfully ignoring what's going on. There's more to this than caring about democracy. And if you can't see that, again, this is staring you right in the face. Now, moving on, continuing here, Venezuela has also, after this, as he threatened before, has now openly broke diplomatic ties with the U.S. after Trump recognized Guaido as the acting president. Trump openly has done so today, and Venezuela's legitimate president, Nicolas Maduro, and as widely acknowledged by the international community, is giving American diplomats 72 hours to abandon the country, which people will use again to point to say, oh, look, he's terrible. But they're outright standing against him and trying to carry out a coup of his government. Why should he continue to work with them? Now, we should be asking ourselves, really asking ourselves, whether you disagree with me or not, even if the hundreds of international monitors that I continue to point out who deemed Maduro's election legitimate, hundreds of representatives from different countries all around the world, hundreds of them, all deemed Maduro's election legitimate, even if those hundreds of people were all tricked or just got it wrong, including former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, who openly said it was one of the most legitimate elections he'd ever seen, which is quite if all them being wrong is quite a stretch, but anything is possible. But even if that is the case, how is it acceptable that the U.S. feels it has the right to simply override everyone else and force the world to comply with what it wants, what it says is right? That's called being the policeman of the world, and not in a positive way. Funny that that's exactly the thing they continue to say that we don't want to be, and then go and do it. Now, Maduro said in his speech the U.S. was making a grave mistake by trying to impose a president on Venezuela, and rattled off a long list of countries, Guatemala, Brazil, Chile, and Argentina, and more, that saw leftist governments toppled or come under military rule during the Cold War with U.S. support. Again, the ridiculous hypocrisy of doing of the what they're continuing to do by backing dictators historically seen, clear hit dictators. We cannot deny, looking back at the groups that they supported, who ended up bringing about some of the worst humanitarian crises in the world, and now doing the very same thing. Now, as well as the numerous leaders the U.S. backs that are clearly dictators, as Glenn Greenwald pointed out, and far from democratic nations. Interestingly enough, most of the people that they support are simply the ones that will bend the knee to U.S. interests. It has nothing to do with democracy. Now, in another interesting article coming from Anti-Media, which talks more about the person, totally not meddling, meet the man Trump just declared president of Venezuela. You know, democracy. Now, Guaido himself, Juan Guaido, is basically somebody who, as I pointed out, is willing to just acquiesce to whatever the U.S. wants him to do, so they put him in power and welcome them back into the fold, to the legitimate international community. Now, Guaido himself has made promises that should the imperialists allow him to become president and his government to take over, they would be welcomed back into this international community. And as the article puts it, the faux president has also made promises that under his leadership, Venezuela would, quote, easily receive debt relief and loans. Sure, let's welcome them right back into the debt slavery system. This is the reality. This is what people like Maduro, good or bad or otherwise, are trying to get away from, being beholden to the larger establishment system. And he's the one here, Guaido, saying, yes, let's get right back into it and put the yoke right back on my neck, or the necks of the Venezuelan people. Now, at the same time they're doing this, the opposition also continues to push through measures to actually freeze the state's assets, actually punishing average Venezuelans more in order to entice basically Maduro into turning it all over, punishing the Venezuelan people that they pretend to be fighting for. You just can't make this stuff up. Now, this is the man backed by, you know, the National Assembly, as I continue to point out. As Moon of Alabama points out in a great article as well, and I've said in two recent shows, the National Congress no longer has legal power, or the National Assembly. In 2017, that role was taken over by the elected Constituent Assembly, which supports the Venezuelan government. The Venezuelan Supreme Court ratified that change. That Guaido may be called president by Trump, as he points out, does not make him such. Like in 2017, as he continues to point out, we can expect several weeks of violent protests in Caracas, in Venezuela, during which tens or hundreds of police and protesters may die. But see, this is okay for the U.S. oligarchy. This is the cost of doing business. Kill a few Venezuelans to take control of the country. You know, liberation. He goes on to say there will also be a lot of howling from the U.S. aligned media. But unless there is some massive change in the political and power configuration, the demonstrations are likely to peter out. And the point he's making there, as we said in the recent show, is that he is, at first there was just a lot of middle rung people that were trying to get this happening. Some National Guard. I hear that there's one general now that's kind of been swayed over, but the vast majority of the control structure is supporting Maduro. Now, it says, has the Trump administration a consistent game plan to achieve such a change in the balance of power? That he asks on Moonville, Alabama. Again, if you haven't checked them out, I recommend you do. And I answer that question. I say, well, that all depends on whether or not Trump's claims about all options being on the table was just a bluff, as he said more than once about Venezuela. And should the military openly and overtly intervene, the U.S. military, in yet another country, while still screaming about Russian meddling, at the very least, it will hopefully wake up many more to just how little has changed today. And moving on to another story in regard to Syria that I will tie back to all of this that I think is incredibly important. Well, both these next stories about Syria, this one coming from 21st Century Wire, entitled "Syria Threatens to Strike Tel Aviv Airport If the United Nations Security Council Fails to Halt Israeli Aggression." And this is, by the way, and again, this is the ridiculous nature of all of this, that they will use this to point to say how bad they are. Oh, look at them threatening Israel. This is such a dictatorship. While Israel continues to openly and unprovoked attack Syria. And they've openly said, if you attack us again without cause, we will fire back, as is our right. But they'll only give you one part of that story. Now, Damascus has threatened to exercise its legitimate, and it is legitimate, right for self-defense against Israeli aggression and target Tel Aviv airport in a minor response, excuse me, mere response, they said, unless the Security Council puts an end to IDF intrusions into Syrian airspace, which I highly doubt they will. Now, I recently said, well, they did fire back, and they did on Golan Heights, but that's not a reciprocal response, which is what they promised, and that's clearly where this is going. And they know that when they do so, Israel will cry foul, like they always do, even though they're the ones that have been attacking over and over and over. Now, apparently fed up with years of these repeated Israeli attacks with impunity in the Syrian skies and regular strikes carried out in the vicinity of Damascus International Airport, Syria has threatened to retaliate in explicit terms. It says, quote, "Isn't it time now for the UN Security Council to stop the Israeli repeated aggressions on the Syrian Arab Republic territories?" This is Syrian's permanent representative to the UN, Dr. Bashar al-Jafari. He said this on Tuesday. He went on to say, or is it required to draw the attention of the war makers in this council by exercising our legitimate right to defend ourselves and respond to the Israeli aggression on Damascus International Civil Airport in the same way on the Tel Aviv airport? The point being that it's a civilian location, which is a war crime, but they don't care if Israel does it. But if Syria responds back, as we've always pointed out, it would be a massive news story. Now, in its bid to weaken Syria's defenses against IDF regional hegemony and also keep Syria's main airport from being open for international travel, Israel has launched repeated unprovoked attacks on Damascus, as we continue to point out. And again, by the way, while Israel attacked Syria twice in 24 hours, everyone's talking about this distraction story. Now, Israel has repeatedly claimed that such attacks are done in order to defend itself against Iran and Hezbollah, when in fact no proof has ever been presented to validate these claims made by Tel Aviv. But Tel Aviv is getting more reckless in its behavior. During its recent Christmas Day attack on Damascus, what we covered at the time, it was revealed how the IDF had used two innocent passenger airliners as cover in order to fire their bombs at Damascus, risking all of those lives. And then another incident, they used the Russian Illusion 20 plane, which ended up being hit unintentionally and killing 14 servicemen. This is something that you can see the escalation over the years, or over the months, I should say. Now, urging the UN Security Council to adopt measures to stop such blatant violations of Syrian sovereignty by Israel, Jafari accused France, Britain, and the U.S., all permanent members of the world body, of endorsing Israeli aggression in breach of their responsibility to, quote, maintain international peace and security in accordance with international law. Right out in the open. But of course, the media will never cover that. And as I always point out, it's okay because Syria bad guy. And that's all. There's no justification. What Jafari is saying there is logic. And even if you think they're bad guys, there are things that apply. And there's a reason that these things are there, whether I agree with them or not. And they continue to flagrantly violate them, just like we're seeing in Venezuela today. Now, for the final story of the day, which is a very important one, which from Brandon Turbeville on Activist Post, always does an excellent job. This one entitled, U.S. State Department Email from 2012 states, Al-Qaeda is on our side in Syria. Something that many watching the show are likely not very surprised by. Something that we know is the case. And interesting to remember that we have emails that prove that. Now, for the abundance, as he begins, the abundance of evidence pointing to the fact that the United States and its allies control the terror group Al-Qaeda and use it for their own purposes, both at home and abroad, the abundance of evidence to support that. It seems many observers have a hard time swallowing such a bitter pill. Just choosing to ignore it, I would say. Now, there was a time, however, when in internal emails, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's Deputy Chief of Staff and Director of Policy Planning, Jake Sullivan, admitted to the secretary that, quote, Al-Qaeda is on our side in Syria. Emails that were sent to Clinton on February 12th of 2012 and subsequently exposed by WikiLeaks. As far as anyone can tell, absolute fact. As not one email ever released by WikiLeaks has ever been denied or proven to be false. Quote, Al-Qaeda is on our side in Syria. It was evident early on that the U.S. bombings of alleged ISIS targets inside Syria was in reality an attempt to support the very terrorist organization we're talking about, backed by NATO and the U.S., as opposed to an attempt to actually defeat it, as they continue to claim, as they use as their entire justification for being in Syria. While such a suggestion has been repeatedly labeled a conspiracy theory by the mainstream media and other gatekeepers, even in the independent media, the fruits of America's labor in terms of the bombing campaign cannot be ignored. Likewise, neither can the world ignore the results of Saudi Arabia's bombing in Yemen, both countries in which it's been proven that the U.S. is working in tandem with Al-Qaeda. The truth is that the United States, NATO, and the GCC, the Arab League, are bombing in couch support of ISIS, increasing its gains and holding on to power with every sortie fired. With this fact recognized, the NATO-GCC network of national governments can now officially be labeled, as he puts it, the Air Force of Al-Qaeda. For instance, while the secular government of Bashar al-Assad remained the only force inside Syria actually fighting Al-Qaeda and ISIS, terrorist organizations trained, funded, armed, and deployed by the United States, NATO, and the GCC, the brutality of these death squads was used by the Western propaganda machine to justify a bombing campaign that was actually directed at Syrian military and civilian infrastructure. The height of hypocrisy. Now, these strikes were launched against Syrian oil refineries, bridges, civilian neighborhoods, warehouses, agricultural centers, and grain silos. Sounds just like what's happening in Yemen today. Interesting. Others were made strategically against infrastructure that was set to soon be taken back by the Syrian military after long-fought battles with the terrorists themselves. Now, likewise, the U.S. bombing campaign in Iraq, interestingly, had much more to do with protecting Western-owned oil fields and death squad herding, than eliminating ISIS themselves. In fact, Iraqi armed forces and government officials have repeatedly revealed that the U.S. military has actually been supplying ISIS during the entire course of the bombing. They've said it themselves. The idea that the United States is fighting ISIS or Al-Qaeda in Syria, in Iraq, or anywhere for that matter, is laughable. In reality, the only forces fighting terrorists in either country, Syria or Iraq, have been Russia, Syria, and Iran. Now, consider this staggeringly hypocritical reality in regard to the Venezuela story. And ask yourself, who is really the dictator here? Who is really fighting for the people of Venezuela? The Florida congressman calls Maduro a terrorist, while the U.S. now works overtly hand in hand with the very group they still claim to be fighting. While they still, to this day, claim that they're responsible for 9/11. Working with them. Helping them. Arming them. Ask yourself why one would trust the intelligence coming from such a back-dealing nation. Or trust the claims of the leaders that support it. When it's abundantly clear that they have no problem lying to achieve their desired goals. That they have no desire to actually fight terrorism or liberate what they claim are an oppressed people. They only seek to use these political and emotional manipulations in order to sway opinion and conquer the next country on their list. Now, despite what I see as obvious evidence of their lies, I could be mistaken. I could be missing something. That's always a possibility. And I am always willing to admit and consider that. Now, for those right now in staunch disagreement with what I've presented here, all I ask is, are you willing? Are you able to do the same? Thank you so much for tuning in today. For those who want to stick around, I'll be doing a short TLAV research and review following this show on this very channel, so just stay tuned. We'll talk more about Venezuela and a few other things. You can ask me questions and I will respond. For everyone else, thank you for tuning in. If this resonated with you, as I say, continue to spread it out there. Continue to show people what's going on. At least get them to begin thinking outside the box. Asking, could I be lied to? Why am I trusting the way that what these people say? Instead of being critical of the government, as is our job as Americans, as is quintessentially American. I love you all. Please stay safe. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.